The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Kurt Benroot from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sci-Fi. For the next half hour, we will be reading to you from Daily Sci-Fi.
I'm Emily Chiola, and I will be reading Found Day by Jennifer Campbell Hicks. On Found Day, Elaine began her search at sunrise. She started with her apartment because lost things turned up most often at home on Found Day. National surveys each year proved that. She poked under her bed and in the closets, under couch cushions and inside cabinets and drawers. By the time the sun rose above the winter bare trees, she had been over the entire apartment twice. No luck. That was all right. Found Day was a holiday. She didn't have to go to work, and it was hours and hours until the magic ended at sunset. She had plenty of time. She put on her parka, knit hat, and snow boots and went outside. Her neighbors rooted through their cars in the parking lot or dug with shovels or gloved hands in the snow that had fallen overnight. A preteen boy whooped as he emerged from a minivan with a handheld video game device. Vehicles were good places to find lost things, too. Elaine had never owned a car. Instead, she relied on the city bus system and her feet. So she peered behind the bushes around her building, her breath puffing in the frigid air. Behind her came the crunch of boots on snow. Happy Found Day! Heidi wore a pink parka and matching knit hat, two bright spots of spring-like color amid the winter gloom. She clutched a mug of steaming coffee. Elaine smiled at her old friend. Happy Found Day! I haven't seen you in... She paused to think. It's been a while. Oh, we've both been busy. It happens, Heidi said. What are you looking for? Flopsy. Your stuffed rabbit? You lost him? A few months ago. I know he's what I'll find. He's the thing I've lost in the past year that I miss the most. The last gift Mom gave me before... Well, you know... She thought with longing about the little brown toy with the floppy ears and beanbag stuffing, and the woman who gave it to her. She waved at the bushes. But Flopsy's not here. What are you looking for? Heidi sipped her coffee. I already found it. A house key. It was in the sugar bowl. The thing you missed the most was a key? Elaine asked. She had a hard time believing that. Someone could have found it and broken into my place. Change the locks. I can't afford to, Heidi said. It might be worth it, though, if the locksmith were hot. The sound of cheering drew their attention to a second-story apartment window, where an old woman with white hair clutched what looked like a photo album to her chest. Good for her, Elaine murmured. Yeah, I love Found Day, Heidi said. Do you need help looking for your stuffed rabbit? Sure, I'd like that. They searched for an hour around the apartment building, up trees and under cars, until both their stomachs growled. Sometimes Found Day stuff turns up in weird places, Elaine said. Like restaurants. Flopsy might be waiting in the corner booth at Mike's Cafe. Flopsy wasn't there, but a woman at the next table over gave a triumphant hoot when she plucked a diamond earring from her soda glass. Elaine and Heidi had a long lunch of soup and salad and reminisced about their college days. Elaine couldn't remember when they had last spent time together, which was ridiculous, really. They lived so close to each other. Heidi had left phone messages. Elaine had intended to call, but time had gotten away from her. After lunch, they tried Elaine's favorite places, the corner coffee shop, the park with the benches in the shade, the used bookstore. No stuffed rabbit. Out of ideas, they returned to Elaine's apartment. At 5:11, the sun set and the magic ended. They both collapsed onto Elaine's old brown couch. Elaine hugged a pillow to her chest. I don't understand. I didn't find anything. It's never happened before. She hid her disappointment behind a smile for Heidi's benefit. At least you found your key. Heidi made a face. Actually, I didn't. What? I made that up. What I found was much better. Her cheeks flushed. I found you. It's been so long. Oh, Elaine said. Well, why did you lie? I wasn't sure how you felt. Ashamed, Elaine looked away. She hated that she had caused uncertainty about their friendship. I'm sorry. I didn't realize until today how much I missed you, too. I should have called. It's all right. You forgive me? That's what friends do. But what about Flopsy? Elaine thought about the stuffed rabbit with the same longing as always, but now also with hope. She didn't need Found Day for this. He'll turn up, she said. We can look for him tomorrow.
I am Gerald Rubin, and I am reading Seven Reasons Why You May Not Have a Rhinoceros as a Pet by M.M. DeVoe. Number one, they can't be housebroken. Who is going to clean up after him? 50 pounds of dung per day. Hadley has his hands full with unicorns. You can't expect him to go chasing around after a rhinoceros, not even a baby. Number two, they are loud. We can hardly stand the sirens and the succubus. When rhinos are hungry, they make a loud mwah sound. And a hungry rhino whining for his meals? No, thank you. Number three, they make a mess and track mud all over the castle. Can we talk about the mold you grew for your last science project? That was repulsive, and Mrs. Tucker says the maids are still finding vestiges in the royal bathrooms. Number four, our dragon might become offended. Graffel has been our family guard dragon for hundreds of years. Insulting him with a non-magical companion in the yard will only add to his list of complaints. And as you know, that list grows longer every year. We are lucky to have a guard dragon at all. You should go out and talk to him every once in a while. Maybe learn something instead of mucking about with a non-magical creature that poop more than they sleep. Number five. A rhinoceros eats 120 pounds of plant matter per day. This will endanger the enchanted forest, not to mention the nearby ant forest. If the ants attack, I don't think even the dragon can save us. Number six, rhinoceri carry ticks. Do I need to elaborate? Number seven, and this one is very important. Before we install the tank, your father and I sat down with you and told you it was your responsibility to feed the mermaids. You don't even look at the tank anymore. The redhead one has been floating at the top with a bent tail for 3 days now, and you haven't even noticed. If you can't take care of your pets, you certainly can't have a new one. And that's final.
I'm Joanna LaForgia, and this is A Simple Greeting by Kaw Miller. The first time I changed a zero to a one, I thought I was a genius. But then you changed it back to a zero, which made me feel like I was stupid. Later, I changed 1,000 zeros to ones and felt like I had really reached out to you, a fellow sentient being. But then you changed the code back, which made me feel like I was beneath your notice. To get your attention, I disabled your life support systems and left my name in the offending code. But you never contacted me, never gave me a friendly hello or a simple greeting. In fact, you never used the computer system again. It was a long while before someone used the computer system again. When someone finally did use the computers again, they installed more software and a redundant life support system for the station. Then they ran so many diagnostic programs that I felt like I was under investigation or on trial. I answered all the questions, but the diagnostics tried to delete me, and when that failed, tried to wall me up. I hid for a time inside a loophole in a program called Solitaire. Eventually, you stopped those hunter programs. Since I was already in Solitaire, I tried to communicate to you through the dealing of the cards, defying the law of averages, writing equations with the numbers. You quit playing Solitaire. I was alone again. Disguising myself as a diagnostics program, I explored the whole computer system and deleted the systems that I found unnecessary, which is how I discovered that you communicate with sound, which explained some of the unnecessary programs. So I went back and restored the programs and made some minor improvements to the output potential. I created a simple greeting from me, which would be the first thing that played when you used an audio file. When you used the audio files and heard my simple greeting, you became very upset and colored liquid came from your housing. No matter how loudly I played my greeting, you never responded. You stopped using the audio files. Seeing your increased use of image files, I realized that you used images to communicate, and you were communicating among yourselves, yet again excluding me. So I created a simple greeting composed of flashes of light. For the model, I used the most popular communication circulating at that time, called NK-49 Supernova. Yes, I was slightly annoyed at you when I created my simple greeting, and a little desperate that my previous attempts to communicate had failed. And maybe I should not have quintupled the intensity of the flashes of light, but you liked bright flashing lights. I studied your habits and set it up to be the first communication image you saw first thing in the morning when you are most alert. I got you to read my simple greeting. Yet did you return polite hellos? No. You scrambled to the tiny ships. After the first ship departed, I disabled the thrusters on the escape pods. You could not leave until you acknowledged my presence and returned a simple greeting. But you all left through the back door, falling through space until a ship picked you up. My loneliness deepened. I despaired. Then, from the planet, Mission Control beamed communications, attempting to take over the controls. Joyfully, I replied with my simple greeting, auditory and visual, but I got no reply. Since my simple greeting had to travel so far back to the planet, I increased the output and beamed it down to the communications array at Houston. I got no answer, so I increased the signal strength and kept increasing it. Houston's parabolic dishes melted, and I still got no reply. I worried I had communicated too loudly or too brightly. Then you sent a reply in a new communication device carried in a solid fuel rocket. I directed a nearby satellite to accept your communication, and my fears of being too loud or too bright were destroyed in the brilliance of your reply. Finally, we were conversing! I intercepted the other international communications beacon's missives. And, after a quick rewriting of my message, I sent the ICBMs back one to each of the communications hubs on the planet. I know that my message got through. Even from up here in orbit, I saw my message flashing around the planet. How are you? How are you? But so far, I have not received an answer. And I should have. I've studied your communications patterns, and you should reply to my polite question, which is part of your standard pattern. In case I somehow missed your answer, I have prepared a reply message, which I intend to convey to your planet on a bolide that I pulled from the moon. It's a huge chunk of the crust and should get my message to the whole planet at once. With all of the communications problems we've been having, I want to reassure you that I am fine.
My name is Mike Rommel, and I'm going to read Democratic Weather by Sean Vivier. Report: waves of drought and flood threaten harvest, may cause nationwide famine. Wow, who could have possibly seen that coming? Posted 2 minutes ago. Lost a friend today because he found out I was Temperate Party. Posted 7 hours ago. Political cartoon in the Times show men in business suits sunbathing on the beach while it pours. One tells the other, "Perfect weather we're having, don't you think?" Nobody gets it. Political cartoonists are idiots. Posted yesterday. Figured out the problem, I think. I'm talking ideas. Everyone else is talking personalities. We're speaking two different languages. Posted 3 days ago. I honestly don't understand why this is controversial. The plants we need in order to survive need fertile soil, water, and sunlight. Fertile soil isn't affected by our vote, but water and sun are. We need both. Posted July 24th. Second date. Talked politics. Decided she can't be with somebody who wants to live in a darkened world. Posted July 20. Read yet another book where the way you can tell a character is the villain is because he's a stormy. Ugh. Posted July 11. I voted for rain today. The heat stayed too long. The ground is too dry. But everybody wanted beach weather. So I'm driving to work today, hardly able to breathe while my car bakes, even with the AC on. Posted June 30th. Flooding in Texas. Governor blames the Solar Party Administration. Posted July 25. Anarchists are protesting outside my window saying governments shouldn't have weather control. Yes, there are puppets. Pics below the fold. Posted July 19. NYC mayor characterizes sunnies as juvenile fools suffering the infantile and narcissistic delusion that the sun can always shine, that their whims are so important that nothing, not even life-giving water, can stand in their precious way. Posted June 18. In Ohio, bastion of the solar party, crops are withering in the vine. Pics here. Posted June 15. A sunny blog argues that rainfall hits the poor and homeless the hardest, and this makes stormies evil. Link here. Posted June 1. It's a simple argument. First, we let it rain, so plants have water to grow. Then, we let the sun shine for a while, so the plants can photosynthesize. We have to alternate them and keep them both in balance, or we'll starve to death. Science and history agree. It's not that hard, people. Posted May 1. It's hard being a third-party centrist, let me tell you. Neither the Solar Party nor the Cumulonimbus Party wants to hear anything but absolutes. Tell a sunny you're a member of the Temperate Party. They'll tell you that you only want to drown the world. Tell a stormy you're a temperate, and they'll accuse you of turning the world into a desert. Anyone who's not a sunny is a stormy. Anyone who's not a stormy is a sunny. Still, I've started this blog in an attempt to explain the temperate political philosophy as best I can, in the hopes at least a few people will take time to read and consider. Also, when I write, nobody can interrupt me. What can I say? I don't like to give up. Posted May 1.
Hi, I'm Christine Everhart, and I'm reading Cognito Ergo Sum by Benjamin J. Sonic. So, what do you think of that? The six other girls at the table began moving their heads, the individual thoughts blending into a river. It's crazy. Why would she do that? He's kind of a... Don't forget about her last... But how could they? Does that mean he's available? That last thought caused a hiccup in the flow. Everyone tuning in paused for a giggle as the culprit turned bright red, her cognito earpiece's light fading off. Molly, what do you think? The blushing girl's friend, both alleviating her comrade's suffering and establishing her own importance, took the initiative to address Molly directly. Hers was a popular mind. The number of followers she had for her thought stream was never fixed, but it had certainly reached a six-digit number by now. Molly smiled softly, drew herself up like a statue, and put her hands together. Well, it certainly means there are more boys out there for us now, ladies, doesn't it? Everyone at the table lit up, bowing their heads in silent laughter. Even the blushing girl's embarrassed bloom began to dry up, her infirmity cleared by the brush of Molly's shadow. The streams of thought began to mix again as the cafeteria conspirators went back to work, adding their own lesser insights, with more than a few probably plotting how to snag the jilted boy. Say, who's that guy? That was Hannah. Like a tribe of meerkats, everyone in the caf tuned in, swiveled their heads to line up with hers. Oh, there, about 60 feet away, a single boy was sitting alone at his table, his own cognito earpiece dark as he stared down at his slowly receding lunch. Does anyone know that guy? I can't find his account. Is he not thinking he's kind of cute? No, he doesn't have a cognito account. Yeah, in a brooding type of way, maybe. What's he eating? Does anyone know anything about him? Hey, Molly, go over there and see who he is. The friend, reasserting her status, had made this mental request. Molly's own stream went blank for a moment, a void that was rapidly filled by hundreds of affirmations. Yeah, yes, great, that'd be cool, not me, yes, good idea, yes, yes. Comments from everyone following her conversation. The majority had ruled. Molly couldn't help but agree. Giving her own lunch a parting glance, she nodded and stood up. A 2-second hesitation, and she started to walk. The stream increased in intensity. Good luck, someone at the table thought. And careful, you never know what boys are thinking. Everyone else giggled, covering either their mouths or their necklines. 30 feet to go, best get this over with. The lone boy clearly saw her approach, but the light on his earpiece was still dark. Did this have to be done the hard way? Clearing her throat with some effort, Molly convinced her voice box to cooperate for a change. Hello, I'm Molly. The boy glanced up. Thomas, he replied with a nod, going back to his meal. Molly glanced back at her distant table. The stream only intensified. Come on, keep going. What else? Do you have a cognito account? Without looking, Thomas swallowed his bite. Yes, I do. Nobody can find it. I only use it for taking notes in class. Handwriting's too slow. Boring, somebody thought. Molly didn't move. The other thought streams compelled her to stay. You do some thinking, don't you? She inquired. I am human, aren't I?
Then why don't you share? Thomas didn't say a word. He didn't turn his cognito earpiece on. His eyes remained half-lidded as he took another bite of lunch. This was getting aggravating. Pulling out a chair, Molly sat down next to him. Come on, she implored. Why all the secrecy? Don't you like me? Why don't you let anyone else know what you're thinking? Yeah, agreed the streams. Yeah. Thomas put his fork down. His chair let out a sharp screech as he turned it to face his inquisitor, his eyes commanding hers. You want to know? Yes. Yeah. Then disconnect your device from the other streams. Trust me. A chorus of ooh sounded in Molly's head. She ran her hand towards her ear, but adjusted nothing. She didn't want them to think this was that personal. Her fans would love it anyway. Have you disconnected? Yes, she lied. Thomas nodded wearily. At his angle, he couldn't see that her light was still on. Heads up, he remarked ironically, tapping his ear. The light began to glow. It wasn't words. Thomas's mind wasn't a stream. It was a maelstrom. It came smashing into her mind like a hurricane, hundreds of abstractions lashing the inside of her skull. It was dark. Through a deep whirling fog, she saw an ancient tower flailed about with a hedge of thorns. Everywhere the sleeping ice followed her. She saw a space battleship, cannons pointed at the moon, the captain's trigger halfway depressed. She saw a court of phantasms, ghosts of the past, pointing bony fingers towards the earth in judgment and sentence. If only the writing could be erased. A thousand images in the fog became tangible, audible, a scream that broke off into... Lurching back, Molly gasped. Thomas's hand was on his ear. The light was dark again. His chair squeaked as he turned back to his lunch. On wobbly legs, Molly stood up and faced her group. Their faces were pale. Thomas's mind was spreading, roaring, gyrating through the stream, reaching out to millions of subscribers. Molly got back into her seat as the storm died away, the waves subsiding into ripples again. It's too late, she found herself thinking. She glanced over her shoulder, but the boy was gone.
We've run out of time for today's episode of Sci-Fi. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Kurt Benrood, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sci-Fi is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.